Welcome to the ADHD Mums Podcast, a safe place for everyday Australian mums to discuss their struggles with ADHD, motherhood and life. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have the ADHD mum of the century from the Sunshine Coast, Leonie Dawson. How are you, Leonie?
Oh, Jane, I'm rad. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm a fellow Sunshine Coaster, so...
Oh, bestie, just down the road. Where are you?
Yes, just down the road.
You don't have to... Make sure you give us a full address on the internet. That'd be great.
Oh, I'm going to drop a pin for everybody. They know exactly where I live with a little video. I'm in Kawana area.
Oh, gorgeous. I'm up near Coolum.
Oh, beautiful. I love it. The Sunshine Coast is beautiful, just hands down. Leonie is a best-selling author of 2024 My Brilliant Year workbooks, which used to be called the Goal-Getter workbooks. They have been sold and used over 500,000 times, which is pretty fucking awesome. She is an entrepreneur. Leonie has generated over $14 million in revenue whilst only working 10 hours a week. Get ready because I'm about to dive into it. She also has been given many awards. She lives on the Sunshine Coast. She has two daughters and she has a husband. Basically, she's a successful ADHDer and she's a mum. A lot of people don't believe that ADHD or being autistic, because you are both, aren't you, Leonie?
Mm-hmm.
I am both. Awesome. So a lot of people do say that it's not a superpower, and I do tend to agree. I wouldn't say it's like a blessing, but I do believe that when the stars and the moon aligns with the solar eclipse, it can be helpful somewhat at times if you can harness it in the right direction. And I know that Leonie's creative genius would be a part of that, if I could make that assumption, Leonie.
Big time, 100%.
That was my take on you, watching you online and your success. I was like, she's actually managed to crack this somewhat.
I can only talk about my own experience. I get that not everybody feels like it's a superpower, but for me, it 100% is. My neurodivergence brings me an enormous amount of joy and purpose. It's so responsible for a lot of what I've created. So I love what I am, and I love my brain. And it's okay if you feel differently about your brain and your experience, but I can only tell you what's true for me and my experience.
So, Leonie, tell me, were you late diagnosed, early diagnosed? How did that look for you? Just so we get the lay of the land before we start.
Yeah, I'm a late diagnosed girly. I self-diagnosed when I was early 30s, and it was just because a whole bunch of my closest female friends got diagnosed with autism in the span of a year. And I was like, this is so weird, because these are the coolest people I've ever met that I get. In order to be a good friend, I want to know how to support them. And they had all publicly talked about the female autism experience looks very different. And so I knew that I had to look up female autism checklist. And so I Googled that and I read the checklist, and it was like all of my deepest, darkest secrets were like,
wow,
written out. And it was just world shifting at that moment.
Wow.
I knew instantly that it was me. And I was like, how the heck did I not know? And also, it's really fascinating to me because I grew up in, especially for its time, a very disability-friendly household. My eldest brother had cerebral palsy. My mum was a disability support worker who worked with a lot of children with the Asperger's diagnosis, as it was then called. I got along really, really well with all of her Asperger's clients. And she was always like, it's so weird. Like, you have such a deep connection with them.
Isn't it like so obvious when you look back?
Completely. For me, I definitely struggled with social stuff when I was a kid. I worked out how to have friends when I was in high school. I looked around and I was like, boys, there are simple social creatures. I'll be friends with them. My best mates were boys.
Move.
So I self-diagnosed in my 30s. I decided to get formally diagnosed a few years later, just because I was speaking about it publicly, and I did get some autism mums come after me for not having formal diagnosis because they're very protective over their little diagnoses.
It's not like you can, it's like a protected title that only five people can have. I so
I
respect
know.
the self-diagnosis.
So I went and got it, and I'm glad I did because I wanted to check if there was comorbidities. Like I wanted to check, do I happen to have bipolar, because I have bipolar in my family. And even though I don't seem to exhibit symptoms, I was just like, you know what, let's just check for comorbidities. And she couldn't find anything apart from, yeah, you're fully autistic, and also your executive functioning is so shit that you may have ADHD. And I was that the ADHD was a lot more shocking to me because I hadn't expected that. A couple of years after that, then I got formally diagnosed with ADHD so I could access medication and test that out. So ADHD diagnosis is like a couple of years formally diagnosed now. It's a sweet treat to be a part of the double duo. The vast majority of people do. It's 70 to 80% comorbidity, and you probably already know this, but new research is coming out that says that indicates that it may actually be the same brain, just presenting differently in the world. So it's a joyful thing for me to be a part of the neurodivergent community.
Wow, you know what? I've never actually asked anybody on this podcast ever whether they would wave a magic wand and be neurotypical. And I just love the way that you just slayed that in the first 2 minutes because I was like, that is such a great question. My husband, he admits initially he didn't believe that any of us had ADHD. I think he just didn't believe it. He said to me, I think you just see it everywhere. Everyone you think has ADHD. And I said to him, but babe, like we all in groups. So probably everybody around us does have ADHD because it's like both sides of family and all of our friends. And then the other day he goes to me, name me one person that you don't, that you think is neurotypical that we both know. So I named one person and he goes, yeah, it's because she's boring, isn't it? And we both avoid her. And I was like, yeah. Now he says to me, if he finds anyone boring, he goes, they're really fucking boring. They're probably like one of those other people, like those neurotypical people. So we talk about the neurotypicals in our house the other way around. You probably do the same thing.
Yeah, the normals.
I'm relieved that all three of my kids are neurodivergent because I'm like, what will I do with this, with a neurotypical child? I
Oh,
won't know
you
what to do.
know, I'd also be horrified if I got like a really sporty, extroverted child. It is a contagious diagnosis because
It really is.
it's a genetic thing. I was the first person in my family to be diagnosed, and I'm not the last. There'll probably be some that choose not to be diagnosed, and that's totally okay. For me as well, I have been in business for a really long time, and I've hired a lot of people, and now I will only hire neurodivergent people. I cannot work with neurotypical people. I do not understand them. I don't understand their communication because it's not direct and it's not clear. And if I have to make assumptions or stories or guess or assume on things, then that is not going to work well for us. And so I drive neurotypical people absolutely fucking batty in a work environment. I really am looking only at hiring people with autism or ADHD or preferably both. I need to work with people who are supportive and honoring of who I am and not dismissive and discriminatory and completely befuddled.
Oh, absolutely. So then in your business, do you look at it and go, I'm terrible at social media and all the postings and all the tricky stuff and all that. I'm going to find someone who their hyper focus or their special interest is that because I know they'll get high quality. Is that how you do it?
No, I tend to just hire generalists, and I only have a very, very tiny team anyway. I don't want specialists specifically because I change my mind all the time. So, like, we've gone completely blank on social media for 2 years, and that was really cool. I want people who are ready to learn and ready to run with whatever I throw at them and know that the business direction is going to change depending on how I see fit, and for them to be really comfortable with that.
I was just thinking, because if something's not of interest to me, I'm
Oh, yeah.
terrible at it. And so I was just thinking, all these neurodivergent people that if it's, imagine if no one was interested in one area, it was just a complete mess.
Well, that's true. So for me, my people tend to just thrive with just a new project of some kind. They're like, oh, let's go try that out. And then we'll do systems behind it in order to work out how to make it sustainable, basically.
Okay, great. This episode, I obviously wanted to interview you, but I really wanted to hone in on the one area, which was around work-life balance. I think a lot of us are just chasing the formula, which probably doesn't exist, around the amount of success that you've had versus work-life balance, burnout, the excitement of it all, but then the actually having to do it. How do you even start to figure that out?
For me, the doing it 10 hours a week was just what I needed to do in order to run a business. While I was starting my business, I was working for the Australian government in Canberra, and I did that for years while I was building my business up on the side. And that meant I got to like explore and try all different kinds of business models and see what worked for me and see what didn't, see what I loved doing, see what I hated. I'm grateful for that. And that's why I always try and say to my clients, it is so cool to keep a job while you build your business on the side, and that you don't put so much pressure on yourself to work out what business model works for you. And then I didn't leave my government job until I was 9 months pregnant. And then I had a kid who didn't sleep, and I didn't want to send her to daycare. So I just could manage to work out 10 hours a week around the edges of being a mom. So I got very clear about, okay, what's actually revenue producing here and what's not. I think like Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek book has been hugely influential to me over the years, just the idea that there are certain tasks that create the majority of your income. Like 20% of your tasks create 80% of your revenue. 20% of your time creates 20% of your revenue. So if you can out work out what are those super producers and focus on those things and then kill off the unimportant ones, then that works much better. So I've just stuck to that routine of working about 10 hours a week. And that means that it's something that I can continue doing. It's very sustainable for me. I've been, permanent in my business now for 14 years since my first daughter was born, but I've been blogging and selling online since 2002. So having a reduced work week works really well for me in terms of reducing burnout and also reducing the wear and tear on my body because I have hypermobility and my bones dislocate and things like that. I'm not somebody who could probably manage to do a 40-hour work week anymore.
So, how do you go? Let's say you've got a new project and you're really excited about it. Is it tempting to then work more and then physically and mentally burn yourself out because of the excitement of the new project? Or is it easy for you to segment and continue to hold boundary?
I've got some fairly strong boundaries in my life because I've done massive burnouts before and also worked so much that it activates my nervous system and develops a low-grade anxiety disorder from working from your adrenals. So over the years, I've built in a whole lot of sort of buffers to stop that from happening. For example, I have a stop work time every day. My day is kind of full in terms of like I spend my mornings with my husband from about 12 till 2. I'll do some work. Then we'll go pick the kids up together, come home, family time. If at nighttime I've got an idea or I just want to get like another thing ticked off, I'll do that. It's got to be done by 9 o'clock at night. Otherwise, I won't sleep. I need to get like 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night as an autistic person, otherwise I don't function. Then I don't work on weekends. So having those buffers, I can get a bit more obsessed with stuff, but there's not a huge amount of space for it to take up. So if I get an idea for a project, sure, I'll run with it if I decide that's the thing that that's the right strategy for me to do, but it's not something that I can like allocate 10 hours to. If I do, my back is going to shit itself and I have to spend the next 6 months with the osteopath. I'm just like quite aware now we can do it, but it's going to have to just get done in those condensed blocks of time.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned you're autistic. Do you have a special interest that you do then outside of work, or is work then your special interest?
Work is one of my special interests. I also really love reading books. So I read between 100 and 400 books a year. And it's a combination of nonfiction and Bridgerton-like books. I also really like painting and creating and journaling and all of those things.
I find it really difficult to have any kind of off switch. So I was like trying to figure out the reason that you can turn off the work, that you've done it before, you've seen the results, and then you're like, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, it is. Because I know there's an economic cost to the burnout as well. And this is like peak autism, but I have the economic cost of burnout calculator. In my early days of starting a business, pre-kids, I just went full throttle and I was working full time and I'd come home and I'd quickly eat dinner and then I'd be on the laptop until midnight and then I'd sleep for 5 hours and then I'd wake up at 5 a.m. because I read some stupid douche book that was like, wake up time, you'll be more productive. And eventually I just collapsed from exhaustion and I was pretty burnt out for 3 months, and so I couldn't really work on my business during that time. I was just in a heap. I knew that burnout took 3 months. I was earning about $5,000 a month from my business. It was like $15,000 was the cost of that burnout. So now I know if there's anything that I can do to prevent burnout that's going to be less than $15,000, it is going to be of benefit. If I burnt out now, it would probably take me about a month to recover. But in that month, I could have pulled off a $100,000 launch because of that's where my business is at now. So my burnout calculator is around the $100,000 mark. And I know that whatever self-care I can put into place, whatever I can invest in, and also having those boundaries in place to prevent it, then that's a good investment of my time and energy and money.
That calculator, something that you've made yourself? Oh, it is. Okay, clever.
Yeah.
That's very clever.
It's just a nerd thing that I've done. Yeah. So all you have to do is work out how long would it take me to recover from it and how much would be my lost income during that period.
That's the kind of like practical thinking that I think would actually be really relevant. I've never really thought of it that way. Before you knew you were autistic, did you go through big burnout periods? And what did you think they were before you knew you were autistic?
Oh, I just thought it was burnout. I
Or
didn't
just
even just
standard
thought it would be
burnout.
autistic burnout. I just thought it was standard burnout, just like work-related burnout. Things make more sense now, but I was like, oh, this is weird, but I have been working a lot, so this is where we've ended up.
Did you think, though, is it weird that I have more burnouts than other people, or were all your friends autistic, so they were all in burnouts too? And you were like, oh, this is normal.
No, I just thought it was part of being a creative. I had friends who weren't like as hyper creative and hyper focused as I was. And so I just thought that was the speed at which I ran life. And I've always been somebody who's ambitious and goal setting, that kind of stuff, even when I was a teenager. And so I'd go, like, my year five report card says Leonie sets very ambitious goals for herself and is bitterly disappointed when she doesn't reach them. So it's
Wow,
been a
that's
lot.
a really intense statement, isn't it? That's actually quite aware. Usually report cards are like, I feel like they're all generic. That's actually quite spot on. I saw a meme the other day on Instagram was something about like, I was probably bullied more as a child than I realized. And I was like, that's probably true. The other thing I was going to ask you in regards to running a large business and being so successful, but also managing the work-life balance. Do you rely a fair bit on automations, or like how do you do if you're running the courses? Is it taxing on you personally that you're the
No,
face of it?
because of the way that I've set things up. If I just ran with general knowledge and belief that I should be everything to everyone, then that would absolutely suck the life and soul out of me. If I believe that I needed to personally respond to every single person, then that's not going to work for me, like on social media or even in my students. What I want to do is create a whole bunch, like a massive body of work that people can then access and use all of the stuff. I've done over 200 courses now, and that works way better for me. So with those, I batch the way that I can teach them. One, I make sure that the courses are really comprehensive, so they shouldn't have any questions. If the
Oh,
same
clever.
question keeps coming up by students, then I add things into that course to answer those questions. And then I have an open office hour. It's 1 hour a month where people can call in and ask me questions directly. And that's the way that they can connect with me. Otherwise, if they've got questions, one, they can email in and my staff will point them at the course or workshop, or they'll tell them, jump on the open office hour call and ask Leonie yourself. Everybody just has to send in their question in like a chat line. They have to simplify and think through their question to send me, and then I'll give them the answer. And that works so much better for me. And it also means that I can get through 50 questions an hour. I can just go bang, 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 bang. And it's way less of an energy cost to me.
That is really clever. That's like obvious when you say it, but then actually it's not obvious at all. I've been in plenty of the Zoom calls. I think I went on one on Sunday night and it had 40 people and not everybody was muted, which I understand mistakes happen, right? Like I have ADHD, it happens. But it was like really overwhelming and then people with their hand up and then everybody like they then had to give the context. I just couldn't stand it. I was really frustrated.
People can't unmute themselves because I don't allow that function.
Oh, you know what, Leonie? You know what I'm getting from this? I think that you've obviously think through that stuff because I would not think that. I would run as group Zoom and then think, oh, people need to share. So when you think of an idea, do you try and figure out what you are not going to be able to do in it or you're not wanting to do or what will be taxing and then you just don't do it that way?
That's part of that. And then also, if I'm doing something one way and it really shits me, then we work out a system to fix that. Like, I do a couple of podcast interviews a week. And one thing that really shit me was when people would turn up like 15 minutes late or not at all, and then be like, oh, I forgot. Let's reschedule. Like, especially like there's ones
That's
that I have to
really
look up for
painful. It's
6:20
Leon, it
minutes.
happens to me all the time. It's so painful.
I told my assistant about it and we're like, let's work out a rule for this. So people have to apply in order to interview me. We clarify with people that if you do not give us 24 hours notice, then you forfeit any capacity to interview Leonie and she will not be rescheduling with you. We do an automated booking system so it goes straight into their calendar as well based on their time zone. We use Calendly and we also send reminder emails 24 hours in advance. We automate that process as much as possible to fix that issue. And so now I don't think we've even had one person in the last year forget to turn up for a call. And it used to be just completely prevalent.
I think maybe I've got a boundary issue because then I would then go and feel bad for that person. I'm really hearing some strong systems and strong boundaries.
If you let yourself be driven around by other people's needs, you will burn out and your business will not be sustainable and you'll have to pack up shop because it's just too much to cope with. So even emails, people know that if they email in to ask me a question, they're not going to get me.
I used to get DMs, you would imagine. The amount, right? You would have had more than that. So it's interesting because I end up putting a thing on there. I can't get back. Please, can you join this Facebook group? I will answer every question publicly in a group, or you can post anonymously. But if I'm answering the same question one to one, and then there's all these follow-up questions, like I'm spending my entire day on the DMs answering the same questions, I get a lot less DMs because people don't expect me to answer anymore.
Exactly. I used to get those kinds of DMs constantly. My response for a lot of it was, that's something that you can talk to me about in a session. So you can just book a one-to-one session with me here.
Has it taken you a long time to figure out the systems, or has it been a learning process, or do you think that might be part of your genius zone, just coming up with good systems?
No, it's definitely like part of the learning period. I was so floppy and no freaking clue and tried all the things. And then I was like, why do I feel like absolute garbage and want to quit? I never work out the systems beforehand, basically. It's just like when things shit me, then I work out the solution to that and build that in.
Yeah, nice. Okay, I'm learning a lot from this, Leonie. I've actually got some serious things to work on within my systems and boundaries, clearly. I feel like I'm going to have to think on this for a few days.
And
Very
like, just
clever.
like you need to just remember as well, the only way that you can help more people is by keeping your energy good and strong. And if your business is constantly taxing you and taking too much from you, then you won't be able to do that. You won't be able to help the maximum amount of people, and you won't be able to do this for a longer period of time. So whatever you can do to protect yourself, your energy, your genius, your time, that is the greatest gift that you can give to the world.
You always hear about neurodivergent people, particularly starting a new business or a new interest, and they like go so hard for so intensely and they become so good at it so quickly. And then you ask them, oh, how's your florist shop going? And they're like, flowers are dead to me. I sold the shop. I hate all of it. And it's like done. They have 6 months off. and then they start something completely different.
I love that this business like gives me the freedom to do all sorts of shit. Like I can do live events. If I want to create products, I can create products. If I want to talk about something new, I can. I've created a business that allows me like an enormous amount of freedom. It gives me the money structure as well, which is really beautiful. But I know that I need to have really good boundaries in order to make it happen. I need to keep it as a small team in order for it to be manageable to me. I've had a really large team. I had 20 plus staff. It was not a good fit for me as a person,
No,
and
it'd be awful.
it was huge burnout, and was just not cute. I give myself 100% permission to do that and to keep it working in a way that's beautiful for me.
Okay, before we finish up, I wanted to ask you one more kind of general question. What message would you give to women who are trying to balance the life work or the work-life balance?
Firstly, you cannot be everything to everybody. You need to prioritize protecting your time, your sanity, your energy in order to keep doing this, especially as mums. It is my job to keep myself out of burnout and depressive episodes and adrenal freakouts as much as I can. Obviously, I can't prevent it all. But anything I can do to protect myself from that, that's really, really important so I can keep doing my job as a mom and as a business owner. It's not about being the nicest person that says yes to everybody. I have only been able to build a business that's been able to help so many people by having a really strong no list. There's so many things that I say no to. I say no to people going, oh, let's catch up for coffee and can I pick your brain? Let's do all of the after school activities with the kids and have such a full calendar that you're exhausted every single week. That's not for me. I'm going to opt out of that system. I'm going to craft a life and a business that works truly for me, and I'm going to be smart about it. And it's okay if it turns off some people because at the end of the day, I'll have created a good life for myself and my family, and a good business that is able to help people for a really long time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody who's actually come up with a really strong formula that works in this area. So it's really refreshing because a lot of the time these calls, it's something I haven't mastered yet. I'm just coming out of a burnout. I've learned this now, but I'm still battling. There's some really strong messages around that because obviously being a mum, you don't just have the business, which is one whole thing in itself. You also have one or two multiples of children that you need to look after. Plus everything else that goes on with being an adult. You can see why it's cumulative, the burnout. But congratulations, I think you've built such an incredible business and well done. I mean, it's nice to talk to somebody who's successful and can actually take the learnings from the burnout and then put things in place to not do that anymore. It's really amazing.
Thank you. That's really nice reflection to hear that. I always feel a little bit like a red hot mess careening from one situation to the next, going, yo, whoa, no, thank you, like Jesus Christ. But you're right. There's less shit. I try and learn from each shit thing and have less shit going forward.
You've clearly not prioritized yourself in the past, but you've actually learned. Whereas a lot of us just continue on with the same path and, you know, the definition of insanity, the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. It's really refreshing. I'm going to go away and probably re-listen to this unedited, I think, just to get some takeaways. There's a lot I need to learn in this. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad that it's helpful.
And we'll put all the links in the episode notes so no one needs to go back and listen to the words. I'll put it all in the notes and we will tag Leonie. Thank you so much for your time.
You're a babe, Jane. Thank you.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums Podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.